Welcome to the Understanding Our Times broadcast, with bold and insightful discussion of current events in the light of a Christian worldview. We count it a privilege to bring you a variety of guests with thought-provoking analysis and commentary on a weekly basis. And now for today's show, here's your host, Kevin Thompson.
Welcome to another edition of the Understanding Our Times Internet Radio Broadcast. And we're glad you could join us this week, and hopefully you can join us this week. Last week's podcast, we're still talking about Tina Anderson, Chuck Phelps, and the impact on fundamentalism. Last week's broadcast broke all of our bandwidth wide open. And so by Sunday, you couldn't download the broadcast anymore. Except you can go to stuff fundies like, and you can scroll down, you can find, or you can download the program still off that website. And we're thankful for Daryl for his willingness to do that. Hopefully, we won't have that problem this week. But, yes, we are still talking about the Chuck Phelps incident, and more than just Chuck Phelps, but fundamentalism in general. In today's broadcast, we're going to continue the conversation we had with Daryl Dow of Stuff Fundies Like and Josh Cockett of SoundChurch.org. And we're going to continue the conversation about fundamentalism, about the big network. Is there a network of within independent fundamental Baptist churches? We're going to talk about that, and we'll also talk about what to do when you have left fundamentalism. We'll have some words of advice from our two guests. So without any further ado, let's jump back into part two of our discussion concerning Chuck Phelps, Tina Anderson, and the impact on fundamentalism.
Well, you mentioned the system. One of the big things, the big debate, and this is where it seems to me almost clouding the issue, but let's discuss it, the idea of a network. After the 2020 segment aired a couple of months ago, it seems as though the vast response of most fundamentalists I knew that were still within the fundamentalist camp was not anything having to do with Phelps or Tina Anderson, but about the allegation of a network. There's this vast fundamental independent Baptist network. It's a good old boys club where everyone goes to everyone else's college, and there's all these connections. And people are saying, no, we are independent. There's independent by itself should negate any rumors about a supposed network. So let me throw this out there. Is there a fundamental Baptist network?
There's not a network. There are many different networks. Hmm. There are many different, and I usually refer to them when I'm writing as camps, because that's kind of the best way to describe them. They generally revolve around a university, like Bob Jones University or Pensacola Christian College, Hyland Anderson, one of these. They revolve around a specific individual, maybe the pastor of a large church in a specific area could have, you know, individuals in that area who kind of revolve around them. They're satellites in his orbit. But it could be, any of these types of things. But there are definitely influences that are brought to bear, whether it's just the fact that we're no longer going to associate with your church. I mean, the whole fundamentalist movement is predicated on separation. It's what they do better than anything else, is separate from self. So right. That being the case, the greatest punishment is always to have other pastors say, well, we're no longer going to, you know, have you in our conferences. We're not going to invite you to speak. We're not going to, you know, send kids to your college, whatever. I mean, that's the kiss of death in fundamentalism. I mean, once you are cut off from those types of things, you're done for. So, yes, there is most definitely a network. When a college comes out and puts down a position, we believe this, you can believe that there's going to be a lot of alumni of that college who are going to back that up to the nth degree. When a scandal like this breaks, you can better believe that they're, and it's really kind of humorous because, you know, you have Chuck Phelps, who's not just Johnny Come Lately. He's not just the pastor of, you know, First Baptist Church of Podunk. He was the president of Maranatha Baptist Bible College. You know, he's been a somebody. And then to say, oh, well, there's no, you know, I have zero influence on anybody who's outside of my church, it's just disingenuous as far as I can, you know, put it. It's just not so.
Yeah, it's. I'm currently part of a church that I would say is truly independent, and I've, after having grown up in a place that had independent on the name, and I'm seeing that whole idea of independence in a whole different way. I mean, even this podcast here, I still have great appreciation for my alma mater and a lot of people there at Maranatha Baptist Bible College. Of course, I worked there for 10 years after graduating as well. However, if certain people listen to this, you know, I'm going to be no longer considered part of the network, which there isn't a network, but they're going to say, well, he's left. You know, it could hurt my reputation or opportunities or what have you going forward. Even though my devotion to Christ is greater than it ever has been. And it's because there's certain things that that churches do that are in the network and certain things that churches do that are out of the network. It's almost a de facto thing, but the biggest thing is it's kind of a mafia setup. You know, I scratch your back, you scratch my back. You know, we.
So you're comparing fundamentalism to the mafia. Just to be clear.
You know what? It's when. Let me tell you how it goes. And since none of us are from Bob Jones, I'll use them as the example. Bob Jones brings a pastor in, and he speaks in chapel, and that's a great honor. You know, he might get lunch with Bob the Third, which is also a great honor. I hear a lunch with Stephen isn't as great, but Bob the Third is a great lunch. So then he
you're definitely out of the network now, Josh. All right, if he hadn't before, you're out now.
No, I like Stephen actually by interactions a few times. But anyway, then he goes back to his church and says, "Oh, I love what's going on at Bob Jones and." All the kids there who have tuition money to spend go to Bob Jones. They spend their tuition money. Then Bob Jones, you know, then that, depending on how many kids from that church go to the Bob Jones, then that pastor gets to climb up the Bob Jones ladder. And to a certain extent, that happens with almost every Bible college really out there. But it's kind of a, you know, you do, it's, he's not recommending Bob Jones because it's the best place for any one kid. He's recommending it because, you know, if he can get 15 kids from Bob Jones, at Bob Jones from his church, you know, then Bob Jones University, the deans and the whatever else are going to be noticing his church, and he climbs the ladder, so to speak.
Now, Daryl, I've got in my hand, and I'm going to question you here, I have a big blue binder, and the front of this binder says, "Preach the Word." Are you familiar with this binder?
I can't say that I am. Was that something from Pensacola?
That's from Pensacola, yeah. I don't remember what your major was.
I was a computer science major. So
okay, you weren't in
a ministerial major at all.
All right, you were in the ministerial. This is the big blue ministerial class notebook. And I have here, and we were told to keep, we were graded on our notes in this. I kept this, and we're talking about networks. Even within the fundamentalist community, there are at least acknowledgments of a network, because I have here a page entitled "The Bob Jones Network." And Daryl, I wish you'd been there to see this, but I guess you'll just have to take my word on it. This was a message preached by evangelist Chuck Kofty, who used to be involved with the FBF before he left that network. And this is these are his words: the Bob Jones Network. And I've got some charts here where he compares it to a denomination.
Charts?
he talks, and I should scan this and post it on the website. But
I think you need to go up at Daryl's blog. That sounds like something that would go there.
Now, during this message, he compared Bob Jones to Al-Qaeda in that they had this network of spies.
So I was being charitable when I said the mafia a while back.
Right. That's what kind of drew me to this. And by the way, I later asked him about 2 months later in an evangelism seminar. He thought, recant? Do you think there was a bad choice of words to use the term Al-Qaeda? This is 2011, November 2011. Do you think it's a bad choice of words? And he said no. So as far as I know, he stands by this statement. But he's talking about within the BJU denominational network, you have BJU Seminary, pastors and churches, camps, the Wilds, Ironwood, missionary boards, the Gospel of Fellowship Association, Baptist World Missions. You've got BJU Press, you've got Evangelists, you've got the FBF within this network, all sorts of Christian school associations. So it seems at least Pensacola is, and by the way, and Daryl, you can testify, that these are all true of Pensacola as well. They've got their camp, they've got their pastors and churches, they've got their own seminary, they've got a Becca book, the massive homeschool and Christian school curriculums. So it seems hard to say that there is no network, but Daryl, I think that you're right in that there are several networks combined. Is that? Could you elaborate on that a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. I was actually there when Chuck Coffey made that Al Qaeda comment. I'm not sure.
Oh, you did. Okay.
It must have just been. Yeah, I'm not sure if it was a student body meeting or class meeting or something. Yeah, I don't remember, but it was an official school function of some kind.
Yeah, it might have been seniors that year.
Yeah, that very well may be. It may have been a senior
okay.
class meeting. I remember him putting the chart up, and I just remember him saying that. I've repeated that a few times, and people kind of look at me funny, like I'm making that up, but I'm not making it up. So I'm glad somebody else was there to corroborate the story. Yeah, absolutely. The difference, I think, between some of the various organizations is that BJU, for one, it's a lot older than Pensacola, so it's had a lot more time to settle in. They have a lot of history. Reading back through, you know, some of the splits between John L. Rice and Bob Jones Sr. and some of these things, they've had a lot of time to kind of entrench into to things. So Bob Jones doesn't tend to own things outright.
I think I've lost. Hello, Daryl, are you there?
Yeah,
I think we temporarily dropped the call for a second.
I'm sorry. I was just saying that basically the Pensacola tends to want to run things in a more direct top-down fashion. You know, they actually own the camp. They
right.
kind of keep track of things on a very direct level. Bob Jones, they've been a lot older, so they've had a lot more time to kind of distribute and delegate and so on. So the Wild, they're their own organization, and they can say, oh, we're not a Bob, you know, run by Bob Jones. We just have, you know, all Bob Jones people and, you know, Bob Jones churches all send their kids here and so on and so forth. So that tends to be a little bit, and it's a little bit more plausible deniability for them on the network side of things because they can say, see, corporately we're not tied, and their pastors don't tell us what to do except for when they do, you know. So it tends to be a lot more distributed, at least from my observation on the Bob Jones side. But in general, there definitely are these networks, these groups of organizations that kind of all work together in a sort of symbiotic relationship. You know, my pastor sends his kids to this college, and then this college turns around and sends their missions grads to this mission board, and they in turn get supported by money from these same churches. And you know, my dad was a missionary. I've been out there on the deputation trail when I was very young, and the furlough visiting churches, and one of the, you know, the major questions they ask you when you're going to get a meeting is, where did you go to school? Because
right.
if you're a PCC grad at a BJ church, you're not going to get a meeting, period.
The other thing that happens is certain pastors have achieved such a standing that they can recommend men for the pastorate of another church, and I've seen this happen at least three times. That church will vote that person in overnight, because so-and-so recommended them. And, you know, they've achieved such a status. And I would imagine, since we're talking about it, I would imagine that Chuck Phelps may have been in that position a time or two in his life. The patterns that I've observed where there's a smaller church out there that's kind of wanting to be in the network, and he'll tab one of his, some, you know, maybe somebody from his youth group or some other, you know, good man of God that he knows of, and he'll recommend him to that church, and that church will put that guy in, and that guy knows, you know, so-and-so helped me get this job, and so now he's got an allegiance there, and it just kind of grows. The strength of that goes, and then when he decides that he wants to, say, have a guitar in the morning worship, then that other pastor from that bigger church that got him his job can kind of take him to lunch and say, hey, now, listen, you need to get back on the reservation, you know. Or maybe that pastor wants to to use a translation other than the King James. And the network then kind of goes into action mode, and sometimes surreptitiously, sometimes very publicly, will make sure that he kind of stays on the reservation, so to speak.
Josh, you mentioned your church being truly independent, but even outside of fundamentalism, don't we have different networks? I mean, just a couple of months ago here in the Midwest, we had the big Gospel Coalition meeting in Chicago. Millions of, well, I don't know about millions, thousands of people coming from all across the country to hear some of the big names in the evangelical world, the conservative evangelical world. You have Together for the Gospel. Just recently, I was looking for a church out in Missouri, up in the Joplin area, to see if what we could, what our church can do in terms of supporting these people devastated by the tornado. And I looked on the Nine Marks website to see what churches they recommend in the area. So this isn't a problem just toward within fundamentalism, is it?
Well, yeah, and I think there's dangers in all of those groups that you just listed. I think there are some dangers there. And my church, particular this one where we're at, Sovereign Grace Bible Church, which is not in the Sovereign Grace Network. Actually, we're going to be changing our name soon. That's
so you're not holding any allegiance to P.J. Mahaney or any of those guys?
No, not at all. In fact, there are conversations that I have with my pastor where I tell him, hey, it would be nice to have some allies. But we're extremely careful about that. And at the current rate, I would not say that there is one church out there to where we would have much allegiance to at all. And we're kind of exploring that. Although my pastor just had, who was the guy that defended the deity of Christ? Athanasius Contramundo, painted on his, wall, which means, Athanasius against the world. So,
right.
We're not looking to form a lot of networks, I don't think, very soon.
So, Daryl, is this a problem even without outside of the bounds of independent Baptist fundamentalism?
Well, sure. I mean, the natural, tendency of human beings is to form groups of like-minded people, and the natural tendency of people who are of a certain disposition or personality is to want to lead that or use that in some way, oftentimes for good. They have very good intentions. We're going to, use this network of people to go out and do this or that. I think that a lot of times, at least, as I've been observing things, and I'm moving out of the fundamentalist mindset a little at a time. I still,
right.
find things that are in my head that it's like, wait a second, why do I think that?
Yeah, I still refer to my inner fundy.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah, and I have to beat him soundly sometimes in order to get him in line.
I still check for people's sideburns, by the way. I don't know why. Trained as a PPC floor leader, I still look at sideburns.
Same stuff. The same stuff happens. It's crazy.
I completely lost my but just remind me what the question was again, and we'll
The network system, it's still a problem even outside of fundamentalism.
Right. So basically what I found is that a lot of times it helps if the network is overt. If you actually have a presbytery and you have a bishop or somebody, he's the guy who's in charge, and it's not a whisper campaign. It's pretty obvious who's the boss. And I think
you're not somebody's son-in-law. You don't get your job because you're somebody's son-in-law.
And because things are done publicly and things are done above board, then it helps, to keep people honest. And your boss has a boss, Eventually everything goes back. So there are flaws in that system too, don't get me wrong. But I think that a lot of times you get these guys together. Now, what I see in some of these more loose evangelical associations is that at the very least, you have people sharing the platform who don't necessarily have to agree on every single jot and tittle. You've got people on there who are a little bit more charismatic. You've got people on there who are more or less reformed. You've got people who, there's an allowance for a broader spectrum of Christian thought. So I'm encouraged when I see that, because I think that a lot of times we tend to separate on things that really we shouldn't be, because nobody has 100% of the answer, I mean, if you're really gonna separate on eschatology, then I'm sorry, but you know that isn't something, you know, we'll figure it out eventually. You know, it's gonna happen, so we'll figure it out then. It's kind of
I like to turn my pastor's coin. I'm an eschatological agnostic.
Yeah,
at this point,
exactly.
A theological church.
Yeah.
Ironically, though, for a lot of mission boards and a lot of the network, pre-trib is the calling card. I mean, some of them, that's the bottom line. It's almost like you can have almost a broader range on soteriology when it comes to, you know, do we have to submit fully to Christ or is that kind of optional? You can hold a range of views on that, but yet when it comes to pre-trib dispensationalism, if you're not pre-trib dispy, you could find yourself out of the network.
Hmm.
Yeah.
All right, I want to kind of get back to the Anderson trial. Again, we're not legal experts, and we're not going to comment on, you know, was the verdict just or not, or the actual details of the case, because again, as Josh mentioned, we weren't there. We don't know, and we don't want to presume to know. The purpose of this broadcast is to talk about how this impacts fundamentalism. And I'll say this, and you guys can comment. I think the greatest impact on fundamentalism is just in the form of exposure. Now some things, the whole idea of church discipline, the man of God, kind of the veil has been kind of torn back a little bit. One of the FBF superstar, I don't want to say superstar, but prominent pastors within the network now under scrutiny. And again, for a fundamentalist to have a pastor, and again, I don't want to say all fundamentalists, but to have a pastor under scrutiny is a difficult concept.
Yeah.
So go ahead, Josh.
Let me say the amazing thing about this trial, and I'm not a legal expert, but somebody pointed this out.
It's
at
for legal
Iron.
Purposes, of course.
Yes. Somebody pointed this out at Sharper Iron, of all places. But there was a lot of fundamentalism on trial. And there was a lot of testimony that was given that wasn't germane to whether this was a forcible rape or not, that had to do with fundamentalism and church discipline and just how, when a family decides, you know, that Tina should go to Colorado and the pastor's role and all of that. And I don't, that was the thing that I think I was struck by the most is the inner workings, how the sausage was made within fundamentalism. You heard it on the stand in a case like this. I don't know. Did you guys get that sense that the defense was allowing a lot of testimony that had nothing to do with the actual issue that was on trial, but it had more to do with
fundamentalism? Well, even before the trial started, there were pretrial motions about not calling this a cult, which I found very interesting.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Daryl.
I think that a lot of the testimony that related to those types of things, in some ways, related down to the credibility of the people who are going to be testifying. I mean, I think that the prosecution was trying to, and again, I'm not a legal expert here, not a lawyer, but I think that the prosecution was attempting to establish kind of what the context was for the things that were going on here. So when you get somebody like, you know, Chuck Phelps on the stand, and you're asking him questions, what really is, you know, when he says words, what do they mean, and what's the context of what he's talking about? I think that a lot of those ways he was trying to establish, you know, kind of for the jury's sake, because I don't know anybody who was on the jury, I have no idea, but I'm assuming that the jury probably was not full of fundamentalists.
Right.
You know, so given that, I think they were just trying to lay some groundwork for, here's what happened, and here's what these things mean in this religious context.
So
that
this context.
So that when we're trying to establish, you know, who was Ernie Willis and what did it mean when he was a member in good standing of the church, and what did it mean, you know, after the fact, and when these confessions were made, what does it mean when Ernie sits in the pastor's office and tells him things? Well, you know, what significance does that have? I think for those purposes, that's where a lot. But you're right; a lot of fundamentalism was put on trial, and I'm really looking forward to actually getting a hard copy of the transcripts and reading through them, not just the court reporter, you know, version of what happened.
So where does this leave fundamentalism? I don't know what's going to happen to Dr. Phelps, and that's really not my business. We'll leave that up to Colonial Hills and him himself. But where does this trial leave fundamentalism now that some of these things have been exposed? And we've already seen cases with Bob Gray down in Florida and some other cases here and there. Already some people are, Bob Jones III had already talked years ago about changing the name of the movement, almost like a church replant.
What he says goes, right? So if he changes the name, then it's getting changed, right?
Right, yeah, because, you know, it's Bob Jones. So how does this impact fundamentalism? Do we see more of an exodus out? Or, because as Daryl mentioned, not everybody within the movement, whenever camp they ascribe to or non-camp, but there are a lot of good pastors and good people movement. We've all been to church with some of these guys. We all have pastors. There are still pastors I respect and I consider friends who are within the movement. I want to be careful not to burn every bridge, although, again, with this broadcast, maybe
you might have.
Some of those people are leaving, Daryl, you mentioned. So do we have a mass exodus now, or do things stay the same?
Well, I don't think we're going to see a mass exodus, because if something like this was going to cause a mass exodus, it would have happened already. You know, I think there's a lot of resiliency inside of fundamentalism that allows people to handle large amounts of cognitive dissonance, large amounts of scandal breaking. I think that what we're going to see is the more reasonable, if you want to call them that, the more clear-thinking fundamentalists start to abandon the title over the next decade or so. Nothing's going to happen like today, you know. I think that what's going to happen is that you're going to see people who are what you talked about. They're going to start cutting ties and trying to become more truly independent, if that's the church governance that they prefer or they believe is more biblical, if they're actually going to start cutting ties with some of these folks. But on the whole, I don't expect to see you know, it's going to be more like continental drift. This isn't going to be an explosion that's going to rock things to their core. It's going to be one more fact, one more episode in a long list of things. This is going to continue to pile up. And eventually, I think that this is going to just contribute to the already decline of the movement. I believe it's already headed that direction as more reasonable folks, and, you know, I talk to a lot of former fundamentalists as a blogger, as, you know, just an individual. I talk to these folks, and a lot of them, you know, they start out kind of in that I'm going to reform everything movement that was mentioned earlier here. I was there, you know, I'm going to just stay here, and I'm going to help, you know, change things from the inside. But then you find out that you're pushing, you know, up against a tremendous weight, and you simply can't do it. Like, that's what I discovered from the bottom. You can't push from the bottom.
Now, you were told as a fundamentalist, you don't stay in institutions that are wrong. You need to separate.
Right.
So we're almost replaying the fundamentalist movement back in the early 1900s, late 1800s. Josh, go ahead.
I'm a little bit more. I think the decline's going to be more precipitous than what Daryl said. In fact, I think it's almost already happened. Ed Stetzer, who I don't necessarily endorse, but he's active on Twitter, so I follow him. He tweeted about the top 10 largest churches in America in 1969, and they were all Baptist churches, and several, I'd say a good percentage of those would be considered fundamental Baptist churches. Now, there are no Baptist churches in the top 10 largest churches in the United States. So that's one statistic. The other issue is this. I think we're going to see the schools die. And that's going to be the end. We're going to see the fundamental Baptist Bible College movement is going to go under. And that's going to be really the end of American fundamentalism, which again, started in a good place, has some good aspects, has some good people within it, but the current American version, which is, you know, the Republican Party support for Israel, dispensational, you know, social conservatism, you know, pre-trib, all of that, you know, all of those various things that have come to characterize our version of fundamentalism, I think they're going to go, and I think more and more kids who are choosing colleges and their parents are more and more likely to choose something other than a Baptist, independent Baptist fundamental college, and even not even a Christian college. I think they're going to be more likely to stay in their local church and attend the nearest college because in some ways that's a more biblical model. But that's the network really, what I've heard for that matter, kind of circles around these schools because that's kind of where the money is in a sense. And I think as these schools start to drop in enrollment and in donors and so on, that's really when things are going to get rough. And I would say already the numbers are not good for fundamentalism right now.
Well, I would disagree with you just a little bit, Josh, in that I still see, from my experience within independent Baptist fundamentalism, there are always going to be fundamentalists. Now, I think their numbers are going to shrink as time goes on, but there are people who will just live and die by the sword of the Lord. They're just going to be committed, whether anyone else follows them or not. I think their influence is going to be diminished. I think they'll eventually, already they're looked at as ignorant. And again, I'm talking about a certain segment within fundamentalism. But they're going to hold out to the end, the bitter end if need be. But I think there'll still be some remnant, and I know they're going to love that word, that will hold out. Now, we got to kind of wrap up here. We're already way over time, and in fact, I might have to break this up into two programs. But the last question I want to throw out here, we all identified ourselves as former fundamentalists. We've all seen people leave their church, fundamental churches or fundamentalism in general. Some have, and Daryl, I've seen this on your blog on the comment section, you have some who've seen who have swept all the way over from fundamentalist to fundamental atheist. You have some who have still within the Christian camp but have swung over to the seeker-sensitive side of things. And you have others like it seems like us, we're going to try to reform the movement and finally gave up and left, but still within conservative Christianity, I think a truly conservative. So what advice do you have for people leaving the movement or leaving their particular camp to still, how do you advise about life after fundamentalism?
Well, when I figure it out, I'll let you know. to some degree, it's an ongoing process, even for me personally. It's something. I think that what you have to do is you have to go back to, first of all, a theological understanding. I started listening to seminary classes from pretty much everywhere that I could get my hands on. And online, there's, tons of, you can listen to professors for free, from all kinds of places. And just starting to try to reconstruct as much as I can, having conversations with people who are outside of the folks you normally rub shoulders with, Anglicans, Presbyterians, Methodists, Pentecostals, and just find out from them themselves, direct from the source, what do they believe and why do they believe that? I've got a large group of friends and people nothing is more frightening, I've said this before, than seeing a fundamentalist who leaves fundamentalism and just becomes a fundamentalist fill in the blank, a fundamentalist
right.
Calvinist, and they're going to run around and beat everybody in the head until they agree with me, it's just basically another iteration of the same basic philosophy of everything's black and white and, I've got the answers and you just need to get in line and follow me. So I would encourage people to approach it thoughtfully, approach it prayerfully, to not throw everything that you've learned out, but to use that as a starting point to reconstruct. The one thing, and I've asked people this question before on my blog, tell me about some of the good things that you learned at fundamentalism. And one of the things that comes back over and over again is that I was taught a great respect for the scripture, even if it was never actually used. I learned a lot of Bible. I memorized a lot of scripture, and I was taught that was very important. And so those kinds of things are a great foundation to use to begin reconstructing and just reading and applying and trying to go out there and see what people are really saying in the larger conversation in Christianity.
I think that's it, and I think the thing that I agree, from fundamentalism, I learned the word as far as the physical words within the word. I didn't learn very good systematic theology from fundamentalism, but I was very familiar with my Bible and sheer memorization, and that has been valuable. And I would say that the folks who are considering leaving, they need to continue to be devoted to Christ. I mean, that's the bottom line. And realize that there is validity to Christianity. In fact, it's the only real reality for eternity. And just because you had some bad experiences within fundamentalism does not mean you should reject Christ. And I think if I was going to say anything, that would be it. And even not even reject the church. I mean, that there are false churches out there. There are churches with major problems, but there are true good churches. And you've got to really work to find one of those. And it's worth it when you do. I feel very, you know, I have friends and folks who have completely left Christianity, ostensibly because of some of the stuff that happened to them in fundamentalism, and I would say that's extremely unfortunate.
All right, we're going to end it there. Thank you both again for joining us so early in the morning here on Saturday, and I want to thank all of you for listening, and don't forget to check out the websites we mentioned today, stufffundieslike.com. You can also log on to soundchurch.org. It's .org, right, Josh? I'm not
Yes,
wrong.
That's correct.
Okay, and we'll have both of those on the website again.
And that's where our conversation ended. We want to thank you for listening. Join us back here next week. We're going to have the long-awaited-for interview with New York Times bestselling author Jerry Corsi. We'll talk about his book, Where's the Birth Certificate? Is there anything to this birther movement? I've said no on the blog. I've said repeatedly on the blog that this is a non-story anymore since the birth certificate has been released, but our guest next week says no, that's not the case. I've also suggested that this is it's naive to think that there's not some sort of racism behind this. This is the first black president, and he's the first one in modern times to be asked for a birth certificate. Well, our guest next week, of course, rejects that notion as well, so you'll have to tune in for that interview next week. But until then, may God bless you, and have a great rest of your week. And don't forget to check out our website, by the way, www.understandingourtimes.com.